but for worldly ideals, what you wish for your children. May they never lack for physical support. May they never lack for a sense of mental happiness, contentment. May they never lack the feeling of being well loved, and may they never lack a sense of respect. It's what we all wish all our kids, isn't it? How could you wish them anything else? The real truth is that those things are not refuge. They're blessings, but they're not refuge. So then we went, this, you don't have to recall it all this, because this is just the recap. Unless you want to, I mean, if you want to record it. But. So then we went to my good by poetry only friend, why did we have to make a separateness between subject and object? And not just for the purpose of naming it, by in order to say, you know, some sweet happiness into the ear of the beloved, the world around us. But because we're not sure whether we measure up or the world measures up or whether we're equal enough. Is that true? So we keep getting into trouble by clinging to a position. So we develop these different levels of refuge. So what you're going to do when you actually take refuge from a Buddhist perspective is you're going to do that tomorrow. What you're going to do is you're going to look at the times, so you can read it in a second. Look at the times where you're actually feeling that kind of transcendent joy that is not about subject, but about being wide open. Okay, when does that happen in your life? Whenever you bloody well learn anything. One minute you don't know something, the next minute you're totally changed. Whenever you bloody well open your heart to something of beauty, because that day, that place, that time, you've never seen it before, or heard it before, or tasted it before. Also, orgasm, sneezing, hiccup, and yawning. But we're not going to go there because, you know, they bring too many side issues with them. But any of those moments where between one moment you have an interest, a question, and the next moment you're about to get the answer, and just for a moment you're hovering between the two. I call that moment the first. The first time you learn how to add in grade one. One moment you didn't get it, the next moment, a whole new system, right? There's thousands of them the first 3 years of your life. Unfortunately, you forget them all. But they do keep happening all through your life. Every moment you're willing to not know, to meet something just totally fresh, which is usually because you have some question brewing, and it's actually brewed to the point where it's going to move out of you regardless of your reticence or control trips, right? That question is going to move. It's going to move from your heart. It's going to have power. It's going to have beauty, right? And you let yourself do that. And just for that moment, just between the question and the reception, is this magic space called refuge. So, you're welcome, see you later again. So that quality of that being who gave you that experience is called root guru or root teacher. The root teacher is whoever teaches you something new. Is that good? Who you learn something. So you had a root guru for learning to tie your shoelaces. And when you're remembering your gurus, what you're really remembering is that moment, right? Between subject and object. Which is quite different than clinging to what it is you learn, isn't it? If you cling to what you learned, you're caught in what you've already learned as refuge, what you've already learned as identity. Does that make sense? Whereas you open yourself, you have a little more faith, and you look at what is really important. It's not like getting the right answer, regardless of how many times you got blessed for that. It's not the right answer. It's the power to open that is refuge. How can you have refuge unless you let go of all the things you're trying to make into safety? How can you do it? So the idea for refuge is to get all those different characters in your being who are not separate from all the different characters outside of your being, same qualities everywhere, and have them all facing the same direction, the first, all working with the energy of wanting to not only be form, but also be transcendent of form. You don't have to cling to what you know. It has already formed you. That's just like driving home and trying to take the car to bed with you. Not the best option. So is that a pretty good description of what we, for the moment, of the main things we covered? So, Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhassa. And another thing that I want to speak out about a little more today is called perception. I spoke yesterday about perception, introducing some ideas that where there is a passion, there's a perception. Where there's a perception, there's a passion. So you can see, following on the idea of what you take as refuge, that you perceive the path, you have a passion for being right, or being clear about something. I'm going to point this out to you, you know. Whatever your passion is, that is going to continuously be what you're looking for in the world, how to be that in the world. And you're going to tend to use that even when it's inappropriate. Because when things are inappropriate is where it means we don't know what to do. So when you don't know what to do, we pull out our best defense mechanism. Get out of the tub and go and tell somebody, rather than giving them the option of being able to search through your cupboards and fulfill their fantasy. Interfere with their rights, you know? Because you're covering with your trip, you know? Trips collide. You understand what I'm saying? Ask somebody, say, if they're in the bathtub or something, you know, say something like, where's the sugar or something? You know, something. And they don't just say, I'm not sure, I think. You know, they ruin them by saying, well, you can look there or there, giving you free permission to search all the drawers, because, you know, you're looking for the right answers all the time. But no, they get out of the tub, you know? Because they can't give you an answer that's right, unless it's the right answer, because that's their refuge. You have this little battle of the refuges going on. I'm just, this is just a possible scenario that could happen. Not everybody finds these things. I just try to make them up as I go. Creative about it. So when that is the perception, you know, when you have this sense that you're supposed to perform a certain way, then that perception puts out that passion to perform that way, that sense of this is safe, this is right, puts out this kind of reality check where you're looking at the mirror-like wisdom of consciousness, but it looks like this. Good, eh? Isn't that just excellent? I've shown this to some people and they get pissed off. They don't want to know this. Excuse me, I've been in my dollhouse for a very long time and I would thank you very much for shutting that door carefully because it might break and going away. You're destroying my serenity. But if your serenity can be destroyed, it's not. When do you want it to be destroyed? When do you want to stop clinging to using self-pity as refuge? Isn't that true? When do you want to watch just the clarity of this occurring and realize how powerful that is, that depending on the passion, there is the perception, and depending on the perception, there is the passion. And that essentially the whole thing is empty of fixed identity. That one time you see somebody across the room and you think you know them, and whatever your relationship to them was, you feel your whole body going into that truth about your relationship from your point of view, and then they turn around and it's not them. And you feel the whole show just fold, the curtains fall, the theater clears, and nobody's home in like 5 seconds. Isn't that true? Whoop and whoop. Is that this or what? This is what you're going to base refuge on? I don't think so. I mean, maybe you will, but when it falls, will you be bitter? Will you be betrayed? You know? Do you understand? Or are you willing to question, okay, what is a pure motivation? Not just me looking for the right answer, but not only for me, but for all beings. What is it that other people do to find refuge? You understand? Be really clear about this. And eventually, I'm going to give you the answer, but you have to check it out. You come to first. You come to the fact it is that desire for an answer and that willingness to work with what it is, whatever it is, for the benefit of all. That is refuge. That is to say, it's up to you. Do whatever that means. Me is certainly all those different experiences in Jenny, right, in House of Changes, and a few more besides, a few million maybe. According to Buddhism, 51 more. But who's counting? So then you start looking at, okay, what are the firsts? And you imagine this no-name brand figure of a guru. Maybe there's a picture of a guru in here, and I brought it for some reason. There's Shakyamuni Buddha as a guru, that will do. This is a no-name brand, because nobody actually knows what Shakyamuni Buddha looked like. Oh, he does seem to have, you know, afro kind of hair, all curls and curls. and he usually has kind of thick lips and a flat nose. So he's probably African. That would make sense. But then again, who knows? Because there were no pictures or statues of the Buddha until the Greeks had contact with Asia. And then they were very influenced. So a lot of the Buddhist theory mingled with the Greek. Oh yeah, had Sanskrit, the language of Sanskrit, is about the root of about 1/3 of the English words. Fascinating, isn't it? And so before the Greek interaction, which was before 2000, before zero, it was probably about 300 BC, or maybe earlier than that, maybe 1000 BC, somewhere around there. No, maybe 300 BC, probably about 300 BC, when the Greek influence, you know, started going back into Europe from Asia, and that's when images like this came up. Before that, the image that was used to represent the Buddha was not the Buddha, it was a representation of the path he walked. It was a footprint. And you still find the oldest representations of the Buddha is not a figure, it's a way, you know. And the Buddha said that over and over again, basically like what Mr. Fuller is saying, God is a verb. It's the movement of the heart to freedom that is the Buddha. So you use a figure, but you don't actually believe the figure. You actually believe the movement of the heart to freedom. And the figure in front of you is, like I said yesterday, a no-name brand guru with a little slot in the top of his head, and he's a first piggy bank, or Buddha bank, or whatever you want to call it, Dharma bank, or Bird bank, or whatever you want to call it. And what you do is you sit there and you let yourself recall that feeling of first, and it's like you fill them up with that. If this works for you, do it that way. You know me, so of course, my quirky mind, this is perfect for me. Yeah, I like storing up all them first. Because what you practice seeing, habit is very powerful. Where's that picture? Must be in here, it's so still. What you practice seeing, where did I put it? Oh, here it is. What you practice seeing will be your perception. And this is an amazing picture. It's like right on. Where there is a passion, there will be a perception. Where there is a perception, there will be a passion. So you have the passion for seeing that gap between knowing and unknowing. And you start to think of that as safety, not only for you, but for all beings, a better refuge. Because anything that I already understand, anything that I already know, anything that I always already see, smell, touch, I just have to go to a nursing home twice a week for about 5 years before I quit thinking that that's actually going to protect me. Do you understand what I'm saying here? How many of you understand what I'm saying? How many of you don't understand what I'm saying? Did you go to it? It's fine. You know, see that hesitation about saying that? Like, it's not, that's not refuge. Because that's when you're caught in your own emotion about, well, if I have a little more time, maybe then I will understand, you know? So it doesn't allow you that opening. And if you practice that, that's what you're going to keep seeing. You go into a nursing home, you watch people lose the power of their relationship with the object. The world starts to shrink. So first you can't drive anymore, maybe. Then you have trouble walking. Or maybe you don't have any trouble walking, but you get lost because there's so much new development in your town and that road used to go through and now they close it off and put a park in there. Do you understand? So like your perception of reality no longer accords with the reality you're living in. Then you start to get scared. Do you understand me? You get fucking scared. You get horrifically scared because you're suddenly in an alien state, place, totally alien. And as the fear grows, you don't know what to do with it. So it brings up all the past fears that you haven't dealt with. Does that make sense? So when it brings up those past fears, you start suddenly thinking that people are watching you through the window or somebody broke into your place. You're sitting there, you turn on the TV and a commercial comes on telling you about Maxwell House instant coffee and you decide, oh yeah, I want to have a cup of coffee. You go in the kitchen. You make yourself a coffee and you come back and you sit down and you have a sip and then you realize you have to go to the, you know, and then another commercial comes on and you think, oh, well, oh, right, this is about food. You think, oh, well, maybe I should go get something to eat too. Oh, yeah, it's after one. I haven't had lunch yet. And so you go in with your coffee and you put it on the kitchen counter and you turn the tap on and you need to pee. So you go into the bathroom and you pee and you come out of the bathroom. And the TV's on, so you sit down to watch TV, and there's another commercial talking about how good Kraft cheese is. Then you go into the kitchen because suddenly you realize you're hungry and there's a warm cup of coffee in there. And it wasn't yours. Who's been in here? Mm-hmm. Oh my God, who broke it? I was in the bathroom, somebody broke in. Are they still here? Oh my God. Do you understand what that's like? Now magnify it. Do you understand that losing your idea without practicing having refuge in not being in control? How painful that could be? And then they're left with the emotion running from childhood. Then you start seeing people breaking in all the time. You start calling the police. You start going out and yelling at your neighbors because they've triggered your fear and you have to react. Do you understand me? Go to a nursing home. And just look at everybody and say, oh, this is me. Oh, this is me. If I'm lucky, this is me. Because it's our ideas, the objects that feed our ideas start to have less power because we can't, short-term memory goes. I mean, it's okay if you smoke dope to get rid of your short-term memory. But when you're just living and it disappears, it's not okay. Or, you know, you have babies because THC is produced when you're having a baby, right? So that otherwise, why would anybody have more than one? So that the suppression of the pain. Like, so between each pain, you don't remember. Would anybody have more than one baby? If you actually remembered yourself going, ah!
No.
THC, short-term memory suppressor. But when your brain stops producing that, it stops being able to connect your short-term memory, and you don't remember putting that cup there, and you do have the motives for thinking that, you know, your older sisters are going to do something nasty to you, then that unfinished business from the past is going to rule your perceptions. Because your logical mind has lost its structure. So forget your logical mind. It's not refuge. It's not refuge. It's a beautiful tool. It's an incredible blessing. But it's not as powerful as the Polish Buddha. It just ain't as powerful.
I don't know.
So you have this idea of a figure that represents the power of neither form nor formless. The closest experience we have to that is that moment when we're willing to take the leap off a cliff of knowledge into the possibility of greater understanding. Isn't that true? It's both faith or devotion and intelligence. The intelligent part comes knowing what is not refuge. You're not intelligent if you keep clinging to what is not refuge. Not you may be clever like me, you know, glib like me, have kind of that crowd charisma one-on-one or 300 or 400, no problem. Hey, it's not an issue like me. But if you're clinging to those things as refuge, if you're clinging to a belief rather than an experience, if you're clinging to a belief rather than an experience of refuge, you don't got the right answer. And it's better to know that. It's better to know that before old age hits. I mean, you get an old age, the number one thing you learn in old age is that this isn't refuge. You're watching people age. That sense of reality is not refuge. Maybe you don't have the language to say where there is a passion, there is a perception, and look at your own perceptions with that understanding, rather than just love them as your identity. So there's one more little quote, and then I'm going to ask you for questions, answers, comments, complaints, and then we're going to charge on. This is Lama Yeshe. I don't know if you're familiar with Lama Yeshe. Is a great teacher who, with Lama Zopa Rinpoche, started the FPMT, you know, FPMT, Foundation for the Preservation of Mahayana, the Mahayana tradition. And one of the things they do, for example, is they spend so much time and money each year corresponding to people in jail and going and offering awareness training without particularly it being Buddhist or anything. How to do, like, be able to sit and watch your emotions rather than feel compelled to, you know, how to be able to see passion and perception rather than be caught in it. Right? And so they make this calendar every year, which is the Tibetan calendar as well as the English, it's a lunar calendar. And it has all the different days that you do this meditation if you've taken these vows and that meditation. So I find it very useful. And it has quotes, and this is one quote from Lama Yeshe. It has some beautiful pictures. This is called Amitabha Buddha, who is the wisdom aspect of perception, but was personified. And so this quote says, the reason you see yourself as a deity, because there are many meditations where you image yourself as a deity, like very similar to what you were telling me about the meditation you were doing, about imaging God coming into your heart, and then transforms. So almost exactly, that would be called arising yoga. That's what it's called, arising yoga in the Tibetan. The reason you see yourself as a deity, you're transforming into a deity, is to transcend mundane appearances and mundane actions. Yeah. Actually, seeing yourself as a deity has nothing to do with Tibetan culture. When you project your usual self-pitying image, you think you're not involved with a culture, but you are. Instead, transform yourself into blissful, radiant light and cultivate strong divine pride, pride in the divine. Isn't that beautiful? That's just a beautiful quote. The reason you see yourself as a deity is to transcend mundane appearances and mundane actions. Actually, seeing yourself as a deity has nothing to do with Tibetan culture, with any culture. When you project your usual self-pitying image, you think you're not involved with a culture, but you are. Instead, transform yourself into blissful, radiant light and cultivate strong divine pride. Lovely, huh? To the point. Because otherwise you keep getting caught on form. And form is always impermanent. Whatever is made, compounded, is impermanent. The magnetic pole has moved out of Canada. Who knew? It's on its way to Siberia. I read it in up here. Must be true. To invoke the best frame of mind for the practice of meditation, we call the Rukus and experience their blessing. So we've pretty well talked about that, haven't we? This makes the mind, body, and the place of meditation divine and pure. And it does. You let go of your traditional, you know, running from one refuge to another, from all, you know, vulnerable and aware and mindful and, you know, all the different helpful, clear, all the different refuges that we circle through. And you use all of them to line up and face. You line up and face the divine and all those different aspects of your being. Do that too. You don't change them, you don't wrestle them into a better position. But it's still me versus me. But if it's us, and who art thou? Everybody wants to know that. We all do love singing in harmony. We all do love that. And you don't really all have to say the same words. Just the harmony. And every culture has a different idea of harmony. But it could still be harmony. Okay? If you're not trying to see who's right, but you're listening to the overall chorus, to the first, that could be harmony. It's harmony of intent. That's harmony. So this is a very interesting country. We've got a lot of different warriors and priests, wimps, peacemongers, all living inside there. Is that true? They're all living inside. So what you want to do is have them singing in one direction. Because otherwise I will just be taking on the flag of whoever is the latest winner. In the war of self-protection. And frankly, my dear, it's so fucking boring. Don't you think? It's exhausting, it's boring. Oh, yeah. And all the soaps start being the same. So you acknowledge the clarity of mind known as it is. What a gift that we have the awareness to look at this picture and recognize the truth of it. You know? Isn't it? That we have the awareness to look and see that this is the state of passion and perception, so that when you're watching your passion, perception, you know you're looking at your own passion. When you're watching somebody who obviously just doesn't understand why you're right, you are seeing your own passion. Okay. It isn't that you're not seeing it. It's that how you interpret it is not seeing it. So it's not negating the world of form, but it's the negating the attachment to being right about the world of form. And we're back to the Polish movie. This is so brilliant, this picture.
You're not there with the pair.
So, when you have clarity, basically you are that whole picture, which includes the dance between the two, the energy, the knowing that it is the passion that gives me the power to attain a perception. And the perception tends to get stuck in trying to maintain that experience. You have an experience of the first time you did something and you try to cling to it by clinging to the answer. Rather than letting go of the answer, allowing yourself to dwell in unknowing, because you have to find the right answer. No, you don't. No, you don't. That's just arrogant crap. So there.
Love you
too. Well, it takes one to know one. Indeed. So the whole quality of clarity is that acknowledgement that what you are perceiving is essentially a composite of the moment and is itself inherently empty because of what you perceive depends on the perceiver. Is that true? It also depends on the perceived. Whether the perceived is in the realm of form, it's in the realm of the speech body, or it's a realm of the mind. There are three levels of perception. If it's in the realm of form, then you have to see it in terms of whatever is come into being as a result of past causes. Whatever is come into being is a result of past causes. And the clarity of seeing that, so if the door is locked, you don't get mad and kick the door because then you got a sore toe and a locked door. Like, eventually you learn. Eventually some of us take a long time. But you say, oh, it's because it was locked in the past. If I'm going to kick, I should go into the past and kick whoever locked it. Oh, that was me, but that was in the past. Is that the same me? And then you awaken from that question, you see? No, no. Yeah, yeah. I'm with you. The clarity of mind is to do with realizing that perception itself is not fixed, that the elementals in this room are these, you know, there are different levels of angels. The angels in this room, or the microbes in this room, or, you know, the dust mites in this room, or the even the other humans in this room will not perceive this room the same way I do. They won't look at the walls and have a fantasy about the house they moved into off the farm. Like I do. Because that was at a certain age. And that was in a certain neighborhood where there was, like, certainly no buildings, neighbors. Right away. It took a while. It was a different quality. Is that clear? And certainly the elementals, I'm going to see this room, if you were at. And if there's any flies or, you know, in there, they're not going to see it this way. Dogs have a better sense of smell. Eagles have a better eyesight. And we're back to all the people sitting around the flowers in the middle of the room and me asking them all to count them and see how many they see and then asking them each to say without moving their heads, they have to count them. And I say to them, so how many did you see and you see and you see? And they all don't have the same answer. Why? It's just those flowers and those people. And every time you have a different passion, there's a different perception and you don't have the same answer. Inside, counting the flowers, out flowers, outside, counting the flowers. Understanding that is called clarity. Knowing that there is a flow of circumstances that changes your awareness. Is that clear? Mm-hmm. Clear. The clarity of not being caught in having to be this or fixed The clarity of being able to see the flow of circumstance, to understand cause and effect without clinging to your perception. That's so beautiful, isn't it? But it's true.
I think it's true. Don't you think it's true?
You're not sure how you listen to it. Okay. Just okay, so questions, answers, comments, or complaints? Yes, sir. The locks on the suitcase. I'm not letting you off the hook on this one. So to actually see it is called clarity. Mm-hmm. To get caught in judgment is not clarity. Mm-hmm. Because all beings desire pleasure. Mm-hmm. To actually see it without judgment means that you open your heart to look around and saying, oh, well, that person is also doing it, and that person, and that person. Everybody's doing it, and most people will never have an opportunity of knowing that it's not refuge and a sense of compassion. And that is the next step of this refuge, and it's the most important thing. These two steps only are useful, particularly because they lead to compassion, because it's damn hard to let go of clinging to self. And we will do for others what we won't do. Have to open your heart of compassion. You don't have a chance. It's not good enough being sick or being right. It's not good enough. There has to be a willingness to sit with something without someone without knowing, and opening the door to a vow, some kind of vow. It can be first, it can be beyond our experience, it can be, I wonder how the fly sees its circumstance. Do you understand? But acknowledging that with all my power, I'm here with everything I know, right to here, and from here on, it's open to me. Because what else is refuge? I mean, that's what's true anyway. All of my answers are just shields from my lack of my fears. Because exactly, all my answers. You know, that was a nice clean one. You can see it. And you can see what I'm saying about the locks on the suitcase. I'm trying to keep what I've contained so far safe. Good idea when you're going through Singapore, though. Any other questions, answers, comments, or complaints? Thank you for that. What time do you want? Okay, what time would you like to make the appointment? Should we break at 12:30? 12:30 to 2? 12:30 to 2? 12:30 to 2, is that good? Okay. We're just about ready to go for a walk. So, there's a lot of ways to do that, my friend. There's so many techniques. And one of them is, say, arising yoga, practice believing. Don't practice doubt every time. Mm-hmm. You understand what I'm saying? Maybe I would do that, but then it's not. So there's this Zen calling. And it's not that you actually know it. It's just that you keep repeating it. And it goes, how do you get the beast out of that? And what do you do? Or, and sometimes you get an answer too, and the answer is there. There, it's out. You can change the perception, you can change the past. The bond between them will start to deepen. The sense that I can't get away from it is how the I, the fixed identity, that has learned to do that because of some chakra. We make all these vows as children, depending on the circumstances. The one that took me the longest so far, I'll tell you the ones I think.